Moin zusammen, long time no see. Stopp. Ich glaube, long time no hear, das trifft's eher. Auch ich melde mich nach einer sehr, sehr langen Sommerpause endlich wieder mit meiner Engelstimme. Und das wahrscheinlich auch erstmal zum letzten Mal. Aber dafür habe ich einen ganz, ganz besonderen Gast heute bei mir. Und zwar sein Name ist Frank Vivier. Er ist Chief Transformation Officer bei Richemont. Und dieser Mann hat wirklich einiges erlebt. Er hat selbst gegründet und man munkelt ja immer, einmal Startup, immer Startup, aber in seinem Fall kam alles anders. Wie er zu Richemont kam, welche spannenden Learnings aus seinen Jugendjahren gezogen hat und wie sehr eine bewegende und einprägsame Begegnung mit Gandhi sein Leben bis heute beeinflusst, das hört ihr heute in dem Podcast. Die heutige Folge findet auch in Englisch statt. Und with that being said, würde ich mal sagen, ganz, ganz viel Spaß beim Zuhören und ja, lasst euch inspirieren. Hi, Mr. Vivier, thank you very much for taking the time today. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Good to talk to you, and thanks for the opportunity to share some ideas with you and answer any of your questions.
Yeah, so first of all, before we start off with the podcast questions, I would like to ask you some quick either or would you rather questions to start talking and also for the listeners to get you know a little closer. Are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
So we start very easy. Would you choose eBay or Amazon?
Amazon.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Would you rather be in jail for a year or lose a year of your life?
I would change my answer depending on how much one has, you know, approached an experienced life. I would do anything to have a longer time to enjoy life.
Okay. Would you rather know the history of every object you touched or be able to talk to animals?
I would rather be able to talk to animals because I think that old saying of if you want to know something about people, ask their dogs.
Mm-hmm. Do you own a dog yourself?
I used to own dogs, but it was very difficult to bring them along with us, so I miss them very dearly.
The last very question is, would you rather be forced to dance every time you hear music or be forced to sing along to any song you hear?
I'm terrible at both, but I love music. My mother was a music teacher.
Yeah,
and I can still remember play the organ or the piano. And I try to dance and I try to sing and I'm useless at both.
So I would say you wouldn't pick either or.
I would try and do both.
Oh, okay, that's good. So you would do both. That's good. Very good.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for the quick either or would you rather questions. Very interesting insights there. Yeah, then before we continue with the other questions, would you give a short introduction about yourself, Mr. Vivier?
Sure. As you know, I work at Richemont, the luxury goods group, which we've discussed before in terms of the luxury industry. And I'm South African. I've been here quite a long time. Never imagined I would stay this long. But I started off life as an entrepreneur, setting up an internet company in 1992 with a friend, which was crazy because it was very, very early after the birth of the internet, as we know it. I just became very engaged in how the internet and technology can help businesses. The old saying of in the short term, we all overestimate the impact of technology, but in the long term, we underestimate the impact of technology, has been quite an important guide for my thinking about business. And in Richemont, I've been involved in a number of things, from venture capital to strategy topics, but everything grounded in the question how we can exploit and enhance the positive effect of the internet to the benefit of our clients and the growth and sustainability of the group. So it's been a very interesting journey.
Thank you very much. So one question maybe to start off. You said you were an entrepreneur. How come that you ended up in the corporate world at Richemont?
Well, as you may or may not know, Richemont is a family-controlled business started by a South African family, the Rupert family. And in South Africa, they're very famous because they've been extremely visionary and built up a significant group of companies that have created tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs over the last 50, 60 years, and have become very well known worldwide. I met with our chairman, Jan Rupert, during my time as an entrepreneur, and we started to talk about how the internet and technology is actually changing things in South Africa from an economic viewpoint, from a job employment viewpoint, from a competitive viewpoint. And he asked me to join him, which I did after a few years, simply because he's probably one of the best entrepreneurs I've ever met in my life. He's a great visionary. My mission has never changed. The purpose of the business I founded, co-founded with my friend, which still exists today, today's largest digital payments business in South Africa, has always been to build and grow a digital enterprise. Working with Johan Rupert and Richemont, created an incredible opportunity that one can only dream about, and that is to do exactly that on a much, much larger scale. You know, for me, it's like a very large canvas, but the mission hasn't changed. And you see and learn things if you're able to have such a large canvas that puts you in position where you work with very large companies and you can see how things move the needle at scale, which is incredibly insightful and a great learning opportunity.
Thank you very much. I have a really interesting question as a follow-up. So what made him such a good entrepreneur? So what was the thing you really wanted to learn from Jan Rupert?
There's several things that stand out. The context is important. Which is that South Africa is still, you know, it's a third, fourth world country. The Rupert family started their business very soon after the war, and they developed in a number of industries which created significant job employment. But over time, they became very well known for building brands, for their ability to understand brands and how to build brand loyalty, what we call today brand equity, and the relationship between creating fantastic products and loyal clients that follow the brands over a very long time, and how to create brands that can grow sustainably. That's quite an extraordinary capability. And Richemont is a great example of that. We we have brands here that are hundreds of years old, and many of these brands have, over the long, long time that Richemont has been the owner of these portfolio of brands, have rejuvenated them, have set them on a very strong growth foundation for a multi-generational period, and focused on how to develop and deepen the relationship between the brands and the clients by the ability of these brands to develop great products that are iconic, that are timeless, and just a fantastic relationship evolution between the brands and customers. Today, what is described as the life cycle approach to customers, where you know customers for life, and where these brands exist over multiple generations, where the products that are purchased by the grandparents are handed over to the children, the grandchildren, and this evolution takes place in a time today which is extraordinarily fascinating, because younger and younger generations, you know, grew up within the digital world. They make no distinction between the physical world and the digital world, the real world and the virtual world. And yet these brands have managed to evolve and tap into the growth of technology and the extraordinary ability of technology to enhance the very raison d'etre of the brand, which is to create great products, to communicate to the community of clients out there. And this doesn't just apply to the luxury industry. The Ruperts have been involved in a number of other industries. And that's what you find with families that own big groups of companies. Or if you look at Europe itself, for argument's sake, most of the European economy are made up of small to medium-sized businesses. 70-80% of the economy of Europe consists of small, medium-sized enterprises, not massive companies. And Richemont is really like a federation of small and medium and large enterprises that were built and developed over multiple generations by these founders of these brands. And it's our job as guardians of these brands for the next generation to be able to take care of them, to foster growth, development of these brands. And that is where the role of digital comes in. You know, it allows you to develop and explore these relationships between the brand and the development of products and the communication and nurturing of their loyal client communities in ways that were unimaginable previously. Sorry for the long answer, but I can't express it any other way. You know, this is a life wisdom which applies to so many industries and so many entrepreneurs that set off on a journey to develop a great business. And that's what I encountered in my career with Richemont, and the special opportunity, you know, to work with our chairman, Jan Rupert.
Yeah. Very, very fascinating, especially if you talk about the period of time, because when you say and tell the story, it's not like 5 years ago, it's like decades or generations ago. But as a guardian of these brands, may I ask which portfolio brand is the one you like the most, or which are you most proud of regarding development, with regard to, yeah, how the brand has evolved?
You know, when you ask a mother or a father that question about their children, you can't pick between the children because they're all different. They require different approaches to nurture them, to help them grow. So I can't pick out any particular brand. They all are very different. And that's what makes Richemont, you know, quite an interesting place to work, because it's like a big family, and often these brands learn from each other. They work like a big family, and this is what technology allows us these days. It's about intelligence. It's about understanding customers. It's about using technology to reach further than was possible before. If you go back to how these brands originated, in many instances, as I said, they were several hundreds of years old. And you can imagine back then, someone with great artisanal skills had a dream, started producing a beautiful product. It could have been a leather case, it can be a watch, a movement, it can be a piece of fantastic jewelry. Those days, you had to go to the little market and physically carry, your products that you've developed. Your ability to communicate was as far as the market is extended. It really was very contained. And then you would go back afterwards when you've hopefully sold your product. You'll go back to your studio, your atelier, and you would start again. So the ability over time, using technology to enable artisans, because we are still an artisanal business. We design and create beautiful products through creativity, innovation, and a passion for craftsmanship that's embedded in these beautiful products, which have a very long lineage. And ultimately, yes, each of these brands are different because they were crafted around a particular portfolio of products, around an idea. But at the same time, they share a common history, and they share a common product environment in terms of watchmaking or leather goods or jewelry, which means that there's an opportunity for collaboration to deepen the artisanal skills. If you take, for instance, watchmaking, it's a very old established craft, yet it takes a long, long time to become a good watchmaker. And so we set up schools for watchmaking. We set up schools for craftsmanship that make jewelry or leather goods. And so that's an area where brands collaborate to make sure that we can develop the next generation of watchmakers, jewelry makers, leather goods makers, because these crafts are irreplaceable, the knowledge, the know-how. And it's not just in our industry. You look at, if you go to Venice and you go to the islands of Murano you visit the glass blowers, some of those skills are dying out. And it's very important for groups like ours to work, to develop and nurture and capture those skills and bring them into the new generation. People that, young people today discover those crafts. I have a friend whose son studied and then gave up his studies and became an ironmonger. And he makes the most exquisite pieces of iron-based products that are utilities in a kitchen or a garden or in a small factory from his own foundry that he built with his hands. So this is what this industry is about. Ultimately, I just love the experience to have been exposed to this world of artisanship and craftsmanship that's centuries old. And to be faced with, this great challenge, how do you bring this and expose this to newer generations of clients that that discover this through digital ways and then have incredible joy when they're able to physically come and visit the factories and the workshops where these products are made.
Yeah, wonderful answer. Thank you very much. Talking about different generations, talking about like the mother choosing the kids, whether or not which brand it is, regarding your parents, what did your parents expect from your side when you were younger? I mean, your friend had a son who followed his dreams. Were your parents supportive regarding your dreams? Because back then, the internet was kind of a mystery as well. Were they somehow understanding? How was it?
Yeah, interesting question. You know, the longer one lives and the older and the wiser you get, the more you recall the messages that your parents gave you. I grew up in a very small village in the mountains north of Cape Town in South Africa. It's a very, very small place, which was very much driven by the agricultural sector, meaning farms and farmland and farmers. That's where I developed a love of animals, as you can imagine. But my parents always said to me, you have to dream. You have to dream. There's a big world out there. We were living in a small village, which often can be isolated behind big mountains. But don't stop dreaming about going over new horizons. And I carry that with me, and I tell my children the same thing. You know, if I were younger, everything was almost out of reach when you come from a small remote village where I grew up. But if you dream big enough, when you start encounter the big wide world out there, and from South Africa to go to anywhere in the big wide world, you had to travel very far. I mean, it's a 12-hour long haul flight, you know, to go to Europe or to go to Asia. But looking back, the one thing I would have done differently is taking my parents' wise words, I would have gone east. I would have gone east to be exposed to a world that's unknown to us, because as you go into life and you develop your career, it doesn't matter what it is, the fastest growing part of the world is east of where I grew up. I would have gone to China. I would have gone to many countries in Asia to be exposed to the incredibly fast growing evolution, the speed at which they took up the digital age, and that is what my parents taught me, and I think it's an important lesson. You know, don't be fearful of dreaming big. Have a passion. Yes, you are, you know, constantly challenged by having to complete various educational phases in your life. Some of it I hated, didn't understand the purpose behind it. But then you start to realize that education is just a way of teaching your mind how to be inquisitive, how to develop curiosity, how to understand that there are huge differences out there, diversity of cultures, of nations, you know, customers that shop in different ways, people that live in different ways. And the when you have an entrepreneurial mindset, you just see so many more opportunities of how you can develop businesses that fulfill needs out in the big wide world. And once you pursue your passion, and often you don't have the answer for everything. In South Africa, I built up a business people said, you're crazy, because what do you mean by digital payments? We didn't call it, internet payments, but online credit card payments and online payment through kiosks that, you know, like what we know today as bank ATMs, and seeing the revolutions in many industries brought about by, you know, access to technology, To me, that was part of the guidance my parents gave me, because it's facing a new frontier, facing a new horizon. And in South Africa, we very much have that kind of mentality. You grow up with that mentality of, you know, it's there are many new horizons. There are huge gaps between the wealthy and the poor. But there are also great opportunities because people have a can-do attitude. That was an important lesson my parents gave me. You know, you can do anything that you dream of, but you have to use your imagination and you have to go and expose yourself to the big wide world. Don't stay within your comfort zone. Don't get locked into, well, my mother was a teacher. Teachers do incredible things in life. My father was a financial person. I didn't want to be neither of the two, but a lot of kids feel compelled that they have to follow in the footsteps of their parents, you know, or maybe stay in the same area because it's comfortable. You know people, you have a big network of friends. I've always wanted to break those boundaries and go where none of my family had ever been. You know, I wanted to go to other countries. I wanted to explore other things. And I knew that if I was able to build a very successful internet business that offered services to businesses, particularly, to customers using digital means, it would expose me to opportunities in the world out there, because technology, competence is a passport to opportunity.
Yeah. Wow, very, very inspiring. I really need to say that. So for example, my parents, they both never worked in China. But for me, I kind of feel like I need to discover where I'm coming from. I really feel like the urge to go back to my roots, to see how everything in China has evolved in the past few years, to leave my comfort zone. And I remember my dad telling me, Jennifer, you're a woman, you need to remember where you want to go. Is it useful to go to China to work there for a couple of years? You're not young for the rest of your life. You need to take the chance, stay here in Germany. I mean, I have those dreams as well, but for everyone who has those dreams to leave their comfort zone, do you have action steps, tips, what they could do in order to leave the comfort zone in real life, you know?
Yeah, and I understand. Look, it was the same for me. It's one thing to have big dreams, but you have to have the means to go and live those big dreams. But I discovered that very often in life, one has to just take the first step. And the analogy for me was another piece of wisdom that a mentor gave me early on in life. And that is that to grow means that you have to put yourself outside your comfort zone. And that often is painful, and it's not easy, because if you are confronted with, you know, new things that you don't understand, they're foreign to you, that's not nice. That's not pleasant. You don't want to wake up in the morning fearful about how the day is going to go and how it's going to end. But you got to turn that kind of fear into a mindset of optimism and positivism to say, okay, but let me take the step. So as an entrepreneur, I realized that I'm going into an industry that is in the nascent part. It's just newly born. And so I tried to raise capital. It was very difficult. But I finally found people that were prepared to back me. And you have to work hard as an entrepreneur, or even as an individual that is trying to be an entrepreneur, to find ways to take that first step. And once you have the first step and you start to see interest, then you can go from there. But the most important thing is to have a mindset that sees the cup half full and not half empty. To listen to the wisdom of your parents that says, you know, family is important, relationships are important, and you need those relationships as you grow and you step beyond the boundaries, because they can give you good wisdom. And in the end, you know, some of the best advice I got were from people that knew me, that understood me from, you know, a young age. But the important thing is to never, ever give up. Never, ever give up and not believe in yourself. And life is strange. If you have that positiveness, it creates like an aura of positive energy around you. And this positive energy, I really am a very strong believer in this, okay? I really believe in a strong spirit, and that spiritually, you create your own opportunities, because life gives you, you know, a lot of pushback, but with it comes lots of opportunities to grow and doors open that you never imagined. A lot of doors close because, as Johan Rupert often taught me, you know, the doors that you want to be open, they stay closed. And then you have to look for other doors. And then afterwards, you realize there's a reason why that door was closed. And I had to work hard and I had to learn some other skills for a door to open. And then you go to the next stage. You know, when I was young, I always thought you have to have a long-term plan. That's very difficult because life doesn't work like that. You're looking back, you have this long-term plans, but that's not what it's about. It's not what matters. What matters is that you have to have a long-term intent. How exactly it will play out year by year, step by step, stage by stage is different. But I can tell you, looking back, my core mission has not changed in 40 years. It's not changed. I'm still doing what I wanted to do. The details change, and how I had to take steps, you know, left and right to go around obstacles to pursue my dream and my mission as I set it out for myself, and what I wanted to learn and what I wanted to become good at, involved developing additional competencies that I did not imagine at that time. That makes you, to use a new word, more anti-fragile. This great concept developed by Nassim Taleb. And anti-fragility means that it doesn't matter how destabilizing an experience is, or how tough an environment is, because it's uncertain, it's volatile, it's disruptive, unexpected things happen to you, you're faced with unpredictable circumstances. That makes you stronger. And if your mindset says, I am going to embark on a journey, I have a dream, I have a mission, and stuff is going to happen. Okay, stuff happens. That's how life works. That I didn't, you know, I run out of money when I didn't expect it, or I run into much bigger, almost insurmountable obstacles. That's okay. But if you have a positive attitude and you have a big dream, you put that into perspective and you see this as a positive opportunity. And so anti-fragile mindsets are, for me, coming from people that have learned in life that obstacles are good things, that setbacks are okay. You must not allow that to suffocate your dream or to force you to give up or to quit. You cannot quit. You absolutely cannot quit. It must strengthen your resolve to pursue that dream. And where you end up eventually might not exactly be precisely where you thought you would be when you started, but that's also okay. And you must take satisfaction from that. And you must, you know, manage your own ego. And sometimes, yeah, it's a bit difficult because you feel like a failure. Many young people today suffer from what's known as the imposter syndrome, where they feel terribly incompetent, not coping, as if they don't belong where they are, where they've got this MBA degree, or they've got this great job or this great title, but they feel unnecessarily unprepared, as if they are not supposed to belong there. They don't deserve this. And to me, I can appreciate that, because that's what happens to you when you take on big challenges. And one should just say, listen, this is normal. It's normal to feel uncomfortable, to feel like an imposter, because if life was easy, if life was obvious and predictable, you don't learn. And you don't end up in situations where you really have to use every fiber in your body and every synapse in your brain to figure out a solution. Otherwise, you don't grow. So I understand that young people feel that life is much more complicated and they're facing with much more complexity. But in the end, it's still about not giving up on your dream and not giving up on your passion and having a fortitude to remain strong even when you feel weak, and not to be too tough on yourself. And, you know, abide and listen and remember the wisdom from your parents, because they came from a very different environment. Well, my parents were, you know, they were not destitute, but they were poor. They were not able to pay for my education. I had to pay for it myself. They were not in a position to open big doors for me. I had to open those doors myself. But they gave me something that is invaluable, and that is the ability to believe and the ability to never remember or forget your roots, and to always remember that kindness and curiosity, empathy, and having a trusting, the ability to trust in circle of friends around you that will always be there to support you, that's like the safety belt of life that takes you through these difficult situations. So that would be my advice to people. And, you know, it's what I tell my kids. Get out of your comfort zone. Have a big ambition. Have a big ambition, much bigger than what you think you deserve, okay? And go out there and grow life and grow yourself and put yourself into uncomfortable positions on purpose. Otherwise, you know, don't bite off small pieces, bite off big pieces, you know, and go out there and mix with people that think like this, that are like this, and measure yourself against the impossible, not the possible.
Yeah. I feel like I just had a really nice tech talk from your side. And to be honest, I really couldn't agree more. I can resonate with so many things you have previously mentioned. And I have one mantra. I always say everything happens for a reason. It's like with the pushbacks and the new opportunities. I feel like if I have a pushback, it happens for a reason, because I know there is a new opportunity coming. Maybe it's not visible in the first place, but it will at some point. And I also think that energy goes where attention flows. So if I put all my energy, all my positive energy, all my beliefs into something, I strongly believe that this also come true. So yeah, I can really, really resonate with everything you said. I have a question regarding all your experience, because you said you have been keep believing and keep holding to your dreams. But I really want to know what has shaped you the most in your life, like which experience, because I know you went to the East in the end. Was that something that shaped you the most in your life, or what kind of experience was it?
Yeah, and something, yeah, that experience to go and work in different parts of Asia, to be traveling and working very deep into China, they were very formative. But probably the most formative aspect of my life was early on in South Africa. We had compulsory military service, and I always wanted to become a pilot. I just had this dream, because I could see these planes flying over our little village, and I always dreamt I want to be up there, because that's like a bird, you know, spreading your wings. And that's what happened. I ended up becoming a pilot in the Air Force, and it was an extraordinary experience, you know, because life in a squadron in the Air Force with other pilots is an extraordinary experience at a very young age. You learn about accountability. You learn about decision making at a very, very young age, because it's quite a heavy burden. These things are very, very expensive. And unfortunately, you know, South Africa went through a period of local regional conflicts, and you lose friends. You lose people that you lived with. They were like your brothers, so grew up very early on. So you face life and death situation at a very early age. And that taught me a very, very important lesson in my life. And that is that in the end, what matters is that you are still alive. You've been given the gift of life. And that there are certain things that are precious, that really matter. And the rest is really not that important. To have values and to have friends and to have people that love you and nurture you and to be given opportunities to grow, that is what matters. What does not matter are to have fancy cars and big houses and, you know, constantly shopping for the next big best thing. No, but you have to, life is about experiences. Life is about really growing and nurturing experiences and people, and to stay grounded and to give back. That's what's important. So that is what shaped my thinking for the rest of my life. You know, I go back still to this little village I grew up in, and I try and give back. I try and share whatever I've learned, whatever I can bring. And that's what matters. Life today, especially the world that we're moving in with, again, technology, where there's almost no distinction between virtual life and physical life, virtual objects, physical objects. It's a very different environment. And my fear is that younger people kind of lose themselves. They escape into this virtual world of imagined life, and they don't step out into real life and face the real world. So technology is not, you know, is an omnipotent thing, one should be cautious about it. That you have a balanced life, especially younger people, which is not real. And to me, that is what shaped my thinking.
Thank you very much for the honest answer. There's something you might have in common with my parents. My parents always used to tell me that I need to be down to earth, and I need to be like grateful for everything I have. So I know that it's a big privilege to be able to live in Germany, or at least to live in Europe, because I know how life is, or how life could be in China, especially while growing up. And so my parents always taught me to give things back, like to do volunteer work, to do volunteering. So this is what I did. And there was a feeling like some sort of gratitude people give you. And this amazing feeling, like you get the feeling that people feel so happy to have you or so thankful to have you. I think this is something that needs to be duplicated. People need to feel that, and I kind of feel like that this is something that people need to remind themselves of. But I wanted to ask you as well, like, I mean, from all the experience you have learned so far, for which human encounter are you most grateful?
Well, it's quite interesting. Jennifer, I fully agree with you. You know, as I said, I live in Switzerland. I have been extraordinarily, you know, gifted that we have the opportunity to live and work here. It's an incredible country.
Yes.
But there are many similarities between Switzerland and South Africa because of our Calvinist upbringing. It's a very strong, rooted upbringing in South Africa, and Switzerland is the same. It's a very strong, Calvinist, rooted upbringing, where you work hard, you dedicate yourself to good values, you live not just for yourself but for your community. You really make sure that that you are productive, not just for yourself but for the larger community. And it's very, very important, you know, to give back. And the person, the encounter that I had in my life that probably was one of the most formative was, and I know this is going to sound crazy, but we lived in Johannesburg, a few blocks away from Nelson Mandela, before he became president. Wow. And one day he came to visit our neighbors because they were the leadership of one of the important communities in South Africa. And their son was a medical doctor, and he tragically was killed during some crime that was committed, and he lost his life. And so Mr. Mandela came and visited the parents, and of course it was a big entourage, and you know, we were all standing there quite amazed. And so when he came out after his meeting to give his condolences, he stopped his car in the middle of the road, and we were all standing there. I was standing there with my kids, and all the neighbors were standing there fascinated by this extraordinary man, because he was one of South Africa's most favorite people of all times. He was the most extraordinary leader that stood for everything South Africa was trying to be. He was he was a bridge builder. He was a passionate carer of people. And so he stopped his car. He got out, and we must have been, 20, 30 people standing there, and he introduced himself and had a conversation with every single person, from the kids, the little kids standing there, the adults, the gardeners. There were a few people working in the street, repairing, stuff, the maintenance people. Everybody introduced himself. And after that, I once went on a trip from New York and flying back, and the plane was delayed by an hour, but nobody explained why. And then he walked in with his nurse. He was quite old at that point. And he went through the cabin, and as far as he walked, he apologized. He said, "I'm so sorry. This is terrible. It kept you back." And he left such an incredible impression of someone of great compassion and humility. And you could feel it. To this day, I can remember it like it was yesterday. And so when I had that experience, and my kids had that experience, we still talk about it. Nelson Mandela, is an extraordinary man. I get all emotional when I talk about this experience.
Me too.
He was a gift to South Africa, and his memory is still guiding us despite, some terrible things that have happened, and we lose, the sight of the road, and we get back on. But he's probably been the most single biggest part of our collective consciousness as a nation. And there's not a South African that does not feel still the spirit of Nelson Mandela in our effort to rebuild the country and to put it on the right path. So that was my formative experience.
Wow, very touching. I really need to say thank you very much for the incredible emotional story, I need to admit. I think I've never had tears in my eyes in a podcast, but I think that's the very first time.
I'm sorry about that. Sorry. I wasn't intentional, but yeah.
I think that's a very, very nice story. So thank you very much, Mr. Vivier, for sharing. Honestly, I think that's nice that you share those stories and then keep it somehow memorable for everyone who listens to the podcast. Maybe to finish off the podcast, I have two last questions. So first of all, if you could have done one thing differently, what would it be? I'm curious what you're going to say now, because I kind of feel like that everything happens for a reason. That's something that nothing you would change, but maybe I'm wrong. So that's the one first question. And then this last question I want to know is, if you have to give three tips, just three tips to your children, to your grandchildren, to your grand-grandchildren who might listen to this podcast one day, what would it be?
Okay. Firstly, as I said before, it's basically, the same answer. Because there's one thing about living life to the full. I don't carry regrets because you make your choices at that point and you don't know what the consequences always will be. But if I could turn the clock back, I wish I could spend more time with my children when they were young. I was a very absent father. I was always on a plane somewhere trying to get another client, trying to fix things, grow the business. And that was not a very balanced life, but it's a price that you pay. Fortunately, my kids tell me today they're not damaged by it. But I personally feel that that I could have done more, because you realize later on in life that your family is the most important thing. And it's also one of the things that I will tell, that I told my kids, and that is, as I said before, passion and compassion goes hand in hand. You must have a mission, you must have a passionate, a dream, but you cannot travel alone. You have to keep your eye on your roots and on the people that allowed you to go there in the first place. And you have to give back, and you always have to go back to that warm embrace when life is difficult, to be recharged, to regain your energy, and then you go on again. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that don't compare yourself with others. Compare yourself with yourself. And have an imagination and dream big, but be kind to yourself. Be very kind to yourself, because the kinder you are, the more you listen to your own voice, you start to realize that we are blessed with intuition and a sixth sense. I always say to my wife, she has a third eye. She's able to see and sense things that, a 100-page document doesn't tell you, or that, a business case doesn't tell you. You have to trust your instincts. You have to trust and have faith in your God-given ability to sense things. And the third thing is, money is not important. The best reward that you will get in life is when you create opportunities for yourself and for other people, and you build something which gives people the sense of being part of something bigger beyond themselves. That sense of being part of something bigger has been my lifelong mission, and is what's drawn me on when sometimes it gets very dark, because you are part of something bigger. And it involves big energies and big vibrations. And sometimes it's quite scary to be part of something much, much bigger. But when you look back and you have been part of something, and you still are some part of something much bigger, you realize that it has changed you, it's altered your perspective of life. And that's it.
Wow. I think I couldn't wish for a better ending than the tips you just gave me and all the listeners and all the future listeners. Thank you very much, Mr. Vivier, for the podcast, for all the answers, for the stories, for sharing your experience. I couldn't be more grateful for everything you said.
Jennifer, it's a great pleasure. And I really wish you and your colleagues, with whom we had a great conversation some time ago, they're already on their journey, you and your journey. I really wish you the very, very best of life.
Thank you very much. And then hope to hear from you very, very soon, I guess.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Ich würde mal sagen, it's a wrap. Das war meine vorerst allerletzte Folge bei Studentenfutter und ich war bisher immer ganz stolz auf mich, dass ich bei all den spannenden und berührenden Geschichten nicht geweint habe. Aber für alle, die mich kennen, die wissen ja auch, wie nah ich eigentlich am Wasser gebaut bin. Aber bei der heutigen Folge konnte ich mich irgendwie nicht richtig zurückhalten, weil mich einige Dinge an mein eigenes Leben erinnert haben. Aber nun gut, das gehört auch mal dazu und ich bin gespannt, was ihr darüber denkt. Teilt gerne eure Gedanken mit mir und ich freue mich sehr, von euch zu hören. Fühlt euch gedrückt, passt auf euch auf. Und ich würde mal noch sagen, you have to dream, don't stop dreaming. Und ja, with that being said, eure Jen.